Hello and welcome to the October Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of haunted pals get together to talk about spooky anime. The pals are Vampiric Artura.
Hello, everyone.
And Goblin Gozagoz. And I am your host, Ghoulish Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Resident Evil Degeneration, aka Biohazard Degeneration, a movie from 2008. I chose this one because it's October, so we're covering horror-themed stuff. I mean, if you didn't get that from the intro.
Degeneration? I thought that was the subtitle for Resident Evil 6. Get it? Because no one likes that one.
Degeneration? More like Resident Evil Degenerate, because oh my god.
Oh yeah, did you see those boobs?
So this was produced by Digital Frontier, the studio behind Resident Evil Damnation, Appleseed, the 2004 movie, and Tekken Blood Vengeance, which we covered on this podcast. Resident Evil Degeneration has a My Animalist score of 6.93.
Huh.
It's obviously based on the Resident Evil series by Capcom, a survival horror franchise that's been going on since the original PlayStation.
And it's not the Mila Jovovich ones.
I wrote two synopses for this. An airport pickup goes terribly wrong. And it's Die Hard 2, but with zombies. What do you have, Arturo?
Mine is a bit long, but bear with me, okay? A corporation uses a virus they do not understand or know how to control and accidentally unleash it upon the city. Now it's up to Leon S. Kennedy and Claire Redfield to try to save the day. Oh wait, sorry, wrong narrative. That's Resident Evil 2. Let me try again. A corporation uses a virus they do not understand and not... Damn it!
This was released after Resident Evil 4. They can't be copying Resident Evil 2.
Good point, oh, you're right.
But by that point, everyone forgot about 2, so they thought that they would remake it in a movie form.
So what did you come up with, Gus?
7 years after the Raccoon City disaster, the zombies come back. And so do our Resident Evil 2 protagonists. Coincidence?
As it turns out, yes. Right, my notes for this go on for a long time, so we'll get straight into them. We open on the outskirts of Raccoon City in 1998, immediately after the events of the game, with a crowd of people watching a plume of smoke billow out from where the city should be.
Lovely.
We then get a montage of news reports covering the aftermath. The president resigns, Umbrella Corp falls, an anti-bioterror program is launched, and Will Farmer creates a research facility in Harvardville. Harvardville sounds like someone heard of Harvard University and just assumed like Oxford University is in Oxford, so Harvard University must be in like Harvardville.
They named it Harvardville because they wanted smart people to go there.
Both hypotheses are good.
Things immediately went wrong for Will Farmer with protests, a member of staff turning whistleblower, and the human rights organization TerraSave demanding they release results of tests they did in India.
TerraSave, get it? Get it?
No, explain.
Never mind. I was just mocking the name.
The montage ends on a protester showing a photo of someone who appears zombie-like. Then we get the title card. We return to Harvardville Airport, where a protest is occurring outside because Senator Davis, an advocate for Will Farmer, is arriving soon. Claire Redfield meets up with a friend and brags about how much sex she's been having.
That's your brain.
My boyfriend doesn't let me get much sleep. Like, okay. Get it, Claire?
He's the sensitive type.
Her friend asks Claire to look after her niece, Rani, while she goes to get the limo. Meanwhile, a guy aboard a passenger jet is obviously turning into a zombie. And then back in the airport, Lani and Claire are watching the news show footage of the protest which is happening right outside. Couldn't they find a window? Claire talks about working for TerraSave, and Lani calls Senator Davis a bad guy. Random, with a British accent, comments on how Davis's joke sucks, and then leaves. Like, there's literally nothing else to that scene, so you have to assume the dude is coming back later.
No.
We cut to Senator Davis, who is angry his arrival was leaked. An aide suggests that he sneaks out the main doors instead of the VIP ones, which he balks at. Cut to him wearing a baseball cap and trying to go out the main doors.
Perfect.
Lanny immediately spots him and tells Claire, which alerts everyone, this is a really quiet airport.
Well, it's quiet because they're waiting for a zombie attack.
I mean, it's not a hub, Harvardville, so I suppose that might explain some of it. Senator Davis pushes onward, but is blocked by someone wearing a zombie mask, who Claire unmasks. He's arrested, and the officer is alerted to a second zombie, an actual one this time.
I want to mention that she unmasks him, and he looks like a stereotypical hipster, like, with a stereotypical haircut. He just doesn't have a bunch of zits on his face.
I've got to say, the actual zombie had amazing restraint. It walked through the entire airport, ignoring all of the tasty humans, until one dared put his hands on it. So, obviously, it only bit the officer in self-defense.
I mean, you can tell it's just trying to be civil up until it just pisses him off. It was the first one that was kind of sentient.
I assume that he was walking along with the guy who was wearing a mask, so they were just vibing together.
This zombie seems chill, so I might as well be chill.
Yeah, that's what the zombie thought. And the hipster thought, oh, what a great mask.
Zombie see, zombie do.
The senator's Secret Service security officers shoot the zombie, and the zombie and the police officer eat one of the Secret Service security officers, and then a bunch of other zombies appear from literally nowhere to eat the other Secret Service security officer. Like, oh, there's one zombie. Oh, he's turned another person into a zombie. And now there's six zombies. What happened there?
Like, this is the beginning of the Walking Dead syndrome, right? This is very evidently suffers from the Walking Dead syndrome, which is whoever needs to die conveniently dies because there's a zombie that's just going to bite first. But whoever doesn't need to die is just immortal and impervious to everything.
I have to say that I was a bit confused. Like, I didn't think that in the lore, getting bitten makes you turn into a zombie. Because in the games, you get bitten a lot. But I suppose they didn't have, like, the green, the yellow, and the red plant to combine together and use it to heal themselves.
Yeah, you just answered your own question.
Or a health spray, whatever it's called.
Or the capability to grow back your entire arm, Ethan Winters.
Well, that was later. Then that was mold. They didn't introduce mold yet.
Fair.
While going to get Rani, Claire bumps into Curtis Miller, the whistleblower. She lets herself be distracted by him for 3 seconds and loses track of Rani, but resumes pursuit only to be grabbed by Senator Curtis, who asks for help. Then a plane smashes into the terminal and almost plows into them.
Oh my god.
The zombies aboard the plane somehow open the door and start piling out. We then cut to hours later. The anti-bioterror team is on the site and has cordoned off the airport. At this point, I assumed they were the anti-bioterror team, but they were the special response team, SRT, and they don't seem to know what a bioweapon is.
Yep, they just called everyone. There's some firemen, a postman.
The milkman.
Yeah, milkman's there too.
Some lifeguards. So Greg Glenn, a member of the SRT, enters a tent where Angela Miller is literally begging on the radio for something. We never find out what she wants. He reports that they have 2 infected locked in a task force vehicle. This never comes up again. And then comments that the creatures sound like something from a horror movie. And he's so close to calling them zombies.
I mean, it's such a cliche that they're like, oh, this is something straight out of a horror movie in a horror movie.
And the trope of not calling zombies zombies. Like, there's no copyright to pay trademark zombies.
Well, I don't know. Didn't Dead Rising get, like, didn't they have a lawsuit? Because, although I guess it's very similar to the movie that
Dawn of the Dead.
Is that the one in the mall? I always get the titles confused.
I think Last Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, and I think there was one where they made zombies eat brains because it was too similar to the... what's the guy who did Dawn of the Dead? Romero! Yeah, to his zombies. But I don't know. I'm just talking about boring shit.
Well, that's interesting to someone. Leon Kennedy arrives moments later, sent by the president. And Angela brings up a 911 call where we hear Claire, who is in the VIP lounge with the senator and two others. Angela then brings out some blueprints and says that she believes that Claire was calling from the VIP lounge, and I can see she is the world's greatest detective. She's clearly listened to this 911 call multiple times where Claire says, I'm in the VIP lounge.
Wait, I'm sorry, where is it that she was? Oh, wait, I think I got it. She's probably in the VIP lounge.
Oh, shit! I didn't realize that. Well, that changes everything.
They decide to enter through the roof, and Leon says he'll take Angela and Greg only. I'd like to point out that they had still not been named by this point. I looked them up by it because I recognized their voice actors, so I went to Wikipedia. Ah, they voiced that character.
Okay, so I'm not crazy. They didn't name them until much later, did they?
Yeah, it's much later. I didn't actually put in my notes, but I'll try and remember to mention when they get given names.
I was like, yeah, that big lip chick and the bald guy, that's kind of annoying.
Well, there's like seven of them in the tent, and Leon goes, you two, come with me! Which ones? Me? Do I come?
They enter the airport via the roof, and after a couple of minutes, Angela runs after a zombie when they hear it. Greg then tries to stop Leon from following for some reason, and Leon elbows Greg, taking him down to his knees. And in the few seconds that took, Angela has completely disappeared from the very long corridor.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
She's an SRT. She can run really fast. She could basically qualify to be a horse girl.
What, do you think she can dance and sing too?
We can teach her. I mean, vodka can do it drunk.
What vodka can do it being the personification of drunkenness?
Angela tracks the noise to an office and tries to rescue a zombie, like idiots usually do in these things. She's almost bitten, and Leon manages to save her. Angela then proves completely useless in a hostile situation by refusing to shoot an attacking zombie. Greg then tries to act like an action hero and almost gets his face eaten before Leon saves him. And, you know, the two finally start to understand maybe this specialist that they were told to trust knows what he's doing.
I mean, it's just that hair.
We cut to the VIP room where Senator Davis is being a chump. And just take it as read that every time I say Senator Davis, it's because he's currently being a chump.
I have to mention that he looks like a witch. They gave him a witch's face.
I mentioned later in my notes that he looks like the Penguin from Batman.
Oh, yeah. He does look like Colin Farrell.
Yeah, the new Penguin. Like, not even Danny DeVito. He looks like the latest Penguin.
He also looks like the guy from Gotham TV series, but, like, he gained some weight.
He looks like two of him strapped together, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, they hear someone screaming, and Claire says that they should help. But Rani tells her not to go, because her father said that he was going to help her mother, and she never saw either of them again. But Claire promises to return and goes anyway, leaving with an umbrella to use as a weapon. It's a red and white umbrella, get it?
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't gotten that.
I noticed that too, so on the nose.
I mean, she does comment on it to the movie's credit. She's like, oh, yeah, I see. She goes to the corner, one of the corners in the corridor, and several zombies appear from behind her. Even though there's literally nowhere that they could have hidden without her passing them, which means that Claire is legally blind.
Not just that, they're conveniently silent and conveniently don't bite. And I'm not going to do this every time, but conveniently, Claire survives.
Yeah, I'm just going to walk past these, I don't know, I think they're bearskin rugs. Yeah, I'll just walk past them, laying in the hallway.
They must be human-skinned rugs, it's fine.
Yeah, Leon shoots them, and then everyone goes to the VIP lounge. where Senator Davis is angry about the plan to run through the lobby. What happened to the helicopter in the door to the roof?
Someone stole it? I don't know.
Someone stole the door on the roof. Claire comments that the lobby is safer because the zombies are slow, so Davis turns on her. But honestly, it's probably because she's a woman more than anything. He's one of those type of people. Leon tells him that Claire survived Raccoon City, and for some reason, Angela glares at her. I suppose it's kind of answered later, but not really. We cut to them making their escape, and Greg gets bitten. Oh, and this is where he finally gets his name, and then in a minute or two, Angela is given her name as well.
So yeah, they get it immediately after dying. I didn't want to say it up until I got here, but my God. I was like, oh no, the completely unlikable character I still don't know the name of. How will I survive?
That's why she says screams his name about 12 times before she's dragged off. Yeah, he gets bitten and he decides that he's going to stay there and fight off the zombies as long as he can. Leon and Angela then clear the area up ahead of them. And rather than just making a break for it, they decide to just shoot the zombies that are gathering to where all the noise is coming from. Oh no, behind us, blam, 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 blam. Oh no, beside us, blam, blam, blam. You could have gotten to the end, to the exit by now, because you already killed the ones that were ahead of you.
Also, did they ever reload in this scene?
I don't recall. Leon does reload a few times, but I think he reloaded before the scene.
So unrealistic and not like the video game, goddammit.
Senator Davis shoves the child out of the way to save himself, and Ranny is attacked by zombies. Claire then jumps down to hug her. She doesn't do anything other than hold her in her arms.
That was kind of ridiculous. She just holds her and looks around at the people like if she's some sort of nagging mother to a bunch of sentient people. It's like, no, Claire, they're not sentient. They're gonna bite you.
Leon is jumped on by a zombie and decides to throw his gun at Claire. She catches it, luckily, and rapidly headshots multiple zombies.
Yeah, they use the co-op mechanic, the combo attack, the assist. the assist from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. That's what they did.
It wasn't until you said luckily that I realized how horrible they could have gone if she'd missed the gun. I want bloopers.
Claire! What? The dunk? Ah!
Yeah, just hits her in the face. It goes off and kills Ranny.
Oh, God.
I think Ranny should have ran.
Once every zombie in the area is now dead, they wonder where the senator is. We cut to the senator, who exits the airport and unfortunately isn't immediately shot.
Yeah, he was in a hurry to go and fight Batman.
Like, he goes out the door and he's limping. And I thought, oh, he's going to get shot because they think he's a zombie, but no. Maybe if he'd bitten his tongue so he couldn't talk. Oh, it's a zombie, blah, blah.
What a great mask. What do you mean it's his face?
The others aren't far behind, running towards the floodlights, though Angela looks back in time to see Zombie Greg, which took a moment to remove its helmet for some reason.
How would we recognize good old Greg otherwise?
He's wearing his uniform still.
We'd
recognize him better because he's wearing the helmet. Everyone exits unscathed, and Ranny's aunt is behind a fence waiting for them. It took her long enough with that limo. Senator Davis comments that he can't stand kids while watching Ranny reunited with her aunt, so Claire slaps him, knocking him to the ground. But don't worry, the movie isn't over. We still have an hour to go. We cut to Curtis Miller, the whistleblower's house, where he's on the phone to someone talking about clandestine plans. Back at the airport, Claire witnesses some Will Farmer trucks arriving. And Leon reports to Ingrid Hunnigan that his mission was a success. Ingrid tells him that it was definitely the T-virus and that the attack was similar to the one in India. Meanwhile, at the trucks, Claire is asking why drugs were being delivered. And the penguin says, Senator Davis, but add a monocle and he's the penguin, introduces her to Frederick Downing, Will Farmer's head researcher and the guy with the British accent from earlier. The senator laughs at Claire for thinking that Will Farmer was behind the attack, and in fact, they created a vaccine against the T-virus. Leon goes on to corroborate the story, saying that the outbreak in India was a terrorist attack, and the human testing reported in the media was of the vaccine. Angela asks why she and Greg didn't get inoculated, and Frederick Downing blames TerraSave for putting up too much red tape in the way. This hits Claire hard, since she's part of the organization, so she goes for a sit-down. And then Leon mansplains Resident Evil 2 to the only other person who survived Resident Evil 2.
What a dick.
The only person who's there with him is Claire, and he's like, oh yeah, back in Raccoon City, that she was there.
It's such a good way to put it.
It's not like, hey guys, me and her, we survived this thing that happened. No, it's you were there. And anyway, there's an explosion outside, and it's the trucks that were carrying the vaccine. We never find out who blew those up, actually. Senator Davis asks Leon what the terrorists are demanding, and he says, the truth. Apparently they demand the truth about which American politicians had backed the T-virus production, and they want it by midnight, which Angela says is in 4 hours. Claire tells them that she saw Curtis Miller, and Angela says that she's his sister. Smash cut to Curtis setting fire to his house and leaving. Do either of you know why he turns all of the photo frames to face the wall before he sets the fire?
So they don't get burned.
I don't think that's how fire works.
No, I'm pretty sure that's how fire works, Ace.
BRB, setting a fire.
Yeah, let's myth bust this.
Then Angela says that her brother wouldn't be a terrorist. You know, the guy who just set fire to his house. She storms off and loads up with guns and ammo, but Leon catches up with her and asks what she's up to. Elsewhere, Claire has followed Frederick to his car, and he tells her that he's going to the office to check on the vaccine data. She offers to go and help, but instead he asks her to join him for late afternoon tea. It is 8 p.m. That is evening by anyone's metric. Late afternoon tea.
Of course the British man would complain about that.
There's late afternoon somewhere.
So he's like those people who say, oh, it's after five somewhere before they have a drink. Oh, it's late afternoon tea time somewhere.
Yeah, I'm British. I eat my fucking tea. There's afternoon somewhere.
Nerd. Senator Davis watches them drive off and shakes his head. And then we cut to Leon and Angela, who are in an SRT vehicle. I thought that this was going to be the one that had the two zombies in it, but no, as I said, that never comes into it.
Yeah, it's kind of a missed opportunity to do something with that. Or maybe they shouldn't just set it up. I don't know.
They're headed to Curtis's house, which it seems is quite close to the airport, since they can see the fire from the road and don't seem to have been driving for very long. Angela must think that he was inside, because she drops to her knees and starts to explain Curtis's backstory. Apparently he lost his wife and child in the Raccoon City attack, and something about this makes her sad, because in a short while she's going to be all gung-ho and want to go after her brother, who she somehow knows wasn't in the fire.
What I like is that now Angela gets to mansplain to Leon.
Oh, it was a terrible thing in Raccoon City. They blew it up, did you know? I told you I was there, Angela. Come on.
No, I'm talking. So there were like zombies. Oh, no, sorry. We're not allowed to say that word. It was werewolves, I think.
Back with Claire and Frederick, his security card won't work, so he uses an override code to get in. We never find out what this is about. As they drive towards the Will Farmer building, we see it from above, and it looks curiously like some blueprints that we saw Curtis looking at earlier. Frederick explains that the building is an air dome, which means the roof is supported by air pressure. I'll get back to that in a bit.
So every time you walk inside, it farts in your face.
He brings up a holographic map of the facility and explains how each area is specifically for a type of contagion. But they were being the zero area, so nothing infectious. As Claire looks out of a window in Frederick's office, we get the soundtrack trying to make us think that this is Jurassic Park and not a fancy lab.
It's Jurassic Park for the T-virus. Look, we're growing little zombie babies.
Senator Davis calls to rant about woman bad, and Claire asks if it would be an issue if she saw something in particular, and Frederick stares at her before saying no. She looked a mixture of confused and annoyed. Back at the fire, Angela is talking about being bad at her job, but she stopped feeling guilty when her brother told her, if you don't try to save one life, you'll never save any. I didn't write down the specifics, but by being bad at her job, she jumped into the water to save a child and wound up injuring three of her co-workers.
Stonks. It's a child versus three older people. They're going to birth more.
We then get a quick flashback of Curtis on the outskirts of Raccoon City after it had been exploded, struggling to break the blockade. You know, trying to save one life, even though they'd just been blown up. Back at Frederick's office, he finally decides to tell Claire that there is something that Senator Davis wants to remain hidden. He brings up the G virus on his screen, and that makes Claire flashback to seeing a tyrant. They apparently have some of the virus in the facility, but very few people knew about it, and it was obtained through the black market. Apparently, they intended on making a vaccine for it, but were told not to. Also, Davis was part of the committee which decided to bomb Raccoon City. Not sure why he needed to be that, but Claire says that she's going to tell Leon, and after objecting for a moment, Frederick says that there's a problem with the server and leaves the office. Definitely not suspicious.
That's what we tell the non-coding types. Oh, there's a problem with the server, but there's no computer around. But my brain server?
Back with Leon and Angela, they've walked to somewhere that lets them see multiple fires in town, and Angela resolves to stop Curtis. I am confused where they were stood. Claire calls Leon and tells him to get there right now. She's interrupted by Frederick calling his own office, and when Claire answers, he tells her to leave immediately, as there's a bomb in level 4. She looks out the window and sees Curtis with a briefcase in his hand, leaving the level 4 building. Moments later, an explosion cuts off the phone call. Claire is unconscious on the office floor, part of which is missing along with the wall. She wakes up to find that the building has gone from Jurassic Park to Jurassic Park 3.
We're going up in the franchise, nice.
Also, her leg has been stabbed by a shard of glass. This only hampers her slightly.
She just basically pulls a Lara Croft throughout the rest of the movie from here onward.
Leon and Angela arrive in the lobby and split up to take different routes to meet in the inner garden. He almost immediately finds Claire, who is using a coat stand as a crutch. She tells him about Curtis and the bomb, and then we cut over to Angela, who finds a used drug injector and an empty briefcase. Also Curtis. She says that he's injured, though through context, we assume he's injected himself with the G-virus.
We're better at algebra than Angela is, obviously.
He says that he didn't set the bomb, but then a security team arrives and interrupts, aiming guns at him. He turns into a tyrant, and we cut to Leon and Claire exiting an elevator in front of some zombies. They split up, with Claire heading for the exit and Leon going back upstairs. Meanwhile, the assault weapons are useless against the tyrant, obviously. And then Claire reaches the elevator to safety, but then spots a map of the building. Ooh, what's she gonna do? We cut to scenes of the tyrant killing people while Angela gets tinnitus. Leon, however, comes to the rescue with a grenade launcher and drops part of the building on the tyrant. Then with that threat dealt with, the building decides to incinerate everything. Did I say dealt with? Because the tyrant embiggens and attacks again. It kills the remaining soldiers and drops some ceiling on Leon and Angela, and then starts to chase Angela, but Leon throws his knife into the large eye in its shoulder. They hang around for about 20 seconds while it sorts itself out, you know, give it a fair chance, and then the building announces it will set fire to everything inside in 30 seconds. So they finally begin to run.
No, seriously, I'm gonna set that fire, leave maybe.
Nah, we got time. It said, what, 60 seconds? Yeah, I'm gonna tell you, this tyrant, it's not your brother. He just wants to mate with you. because of the blood connection. So 30 seconds. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm just going to keep telling you about this time. Like, Leon, what are you doing?
And that is why this movie is called Resident Evil Degenerates. 5 seconds. Leon?
They manage to reach some water just in time, and Leon takes the opportunity to assault Angela.
Ooh.
Meanwhile, in the control room, Claire has just arrived and discovers that the garden, currently on fire, is going to drop underground. Leon smashes the glass of the water tank they're in, and they go surfing, but without the board, and just barely manage to avoid dropping into a large hole. Unfortunately, they see the tyrant is also unscathed. It's hanging on the bottom of the garden, above the massive hole, and starts making its way towards them. We don't know how it got underneath the garden, but anyway, Claire looks for a way to disable the, I put it, which implies the tyrant.
I mean, I think everyone's trying to disable the tyrant at this point.
Claire looks for a way to disable the sector drop, so decides to decrease the pressure in the air dome. I thought, like, the roof would slowly start to cave in, but this doesn't really play into anything of how it's all resolved.
Yeah, when I saw, you know, pressure decreasing, I was like, oh no, Claire, you idiot.
Well, the camera zooms into the air ducts, and then I thought, oh, does that mean that the tyrant, the G-virus, is going to be spread out? And no, it means nothing. The tyrant catches up to Leon and Angela and slaps him away, so he has to parkour to get off of level 4 before it drops into the hole. Level 1 then drops, which is behind Angela, so she has nowhere to run. I'm not sure why it went 4 and then 1 instead of 4, 3, 2, 1.
And the worst part is that they could have just as easily done that, right? It's not a difficult thing to be like, oh, that one was just number 3 and they were in number 1. No, they decided to make it this really weird convoluted process where it goes 4 and 1. And also, sorry, but this is the second time Leon does something in the nick of time. And the moment the clock hits 1, the thing just plummets to the ground and he's just hanging off the edge. It's like, you get one of those per movie, Leon.
Not for the protagonist of a Resident Evil game.
What? I will not accept anymore.
Luckily, the tyrant finds the photo of Curtis and his family that Angela had earlier and tells her to run. So she stays. But level 0, the one they stood on, begins to fall into the hole. But then Leon grabs her and stops her from falling. But then the tyrant also grabs her and stops itself from falling.
After like 40 seconds of falling, that thing is huge, that tendril. I don't know where it's coming from. It looked like it's coming from his butt. Oh, it's his tail. Okay.
I thought it was his tail, yeah.
Yeah. At first when I was watching the movie, I thought it was its tongue. Then they showed like Curtis screaming at her and I was like, oh, it's not the tongue. Then I just traced it down to the butt and I was like, oh no.
Leon did say it wanted to mate with her.
Yeah, now I know why this movie's rated so high.
She tells Leon to let go, but he repeats the line that Curtis told her years ago and shoots the tyrant. It falls into the hole, and a massive explosion happens. Don't know why. Throwing fire at the pair, but it's cut off just in time by a big hatch closing.
I think the fire, isn't the fire happening because it's trying to decontaminate everything and that's why it happens after all the levels fall?
But there was a fire before everything started to fall.
This was obviously failsafe number 48. First it was the spraying, then it was the burning, and now it's just dropping everything and burning it too.
So the plan is burn it, drop it, burn it again.
And then lock it underground, apparently.
The building tries to kill the pair one last time, with the gander holding on to falling, but they survive and share a long moment. It's interrupted by Leon's phone ringing, and we see that Claire was watching the pair through the security cameras, and then she realizes it's almost midnight. Also, she realizes that the main console recorded the tyrant attack.
Does she realize anything else?
In a minute, she will.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that I use the word realize again. Outside, a helicopter lands and Senator Davis gets out with Claire there to greet him.
So that's where the helicopter went.
She accuses him of being behind the terrorist attack, even though she acknowledges he could have been killed at the airport. Perhaps it was just a stupid plan. But Leon backs him up, explaining that his boss just told him who the real culprit was. And then Claire realizes, that it was Frederick moments before being told. We cut to Frederick, who is speaking to General Grande, a terrorist leader that has been mentioned several times, but I left out of my notes. He's planning to provide the T-virus and vaccine to him, as well as data on the G-virus. Frederick is joined by another car, and it turns out he was expecting someone, but he wasn't expecting Claire and Leon to get out. Also, Angela is behind him, and the moment she arrests him, we hear a helicopter and police sirens. You know, I hate those helicopters that can just turn off the noise. It just makes me jealous because the helicopters around here can be heard half a mile away. Like, buzz off already.
The helicopters are kind of like birds. They go really high and then turn out the helixes so that they don't make any noise while they're falling endlessly until it's convenient to turn them back on.
We cut to the trio of protagonists sometime later, overlooking the Will Farmer facility. I said that weirdly.
And fucking Leon has his noir epilogue. Turns out that this was this and this was that. And when he did this, she did that. And this happened.
So he gets to mansplain one more time, is what you're telling me.
Yes, Frederick admitted he was part of Umbrella, faked his past to get a job at Will Farmer, and had always planned to get rich off of selling the T-virus, so long as he only sold it with the vaccine. See, he's a crazy genius, not crazy. While Angela and Leon are staring at each other, again, his phone goes off. As he and Claire walk away, Angela asks if he'd like to go diving again sometime. Leon asks Claire if she needs a lift in the helicopter, but she says no, she has a limo waiting. It's Rani and her unnamed aunt, yes, she does not have a name, waiting next to a car which is not a limo.
I like that conveniently they look to the right and at the edge of the cliff to the right there's a helicopter, and they look to the left and at the edge of a cliff there's the car.
Yeah, it might be based on a vintage Rolls-Royce limo, but it has a convertible soft top roof, so not really.
I don't know cars.
I'm pretty sure the X-Men had one of those in the 60s, and that was called the Rolls-Royce. They agreed to meet somewhere normal next time. It was an airport, not normal, and leave. We cut to someone's office that we assume to be Senator Davis, where a corpse is covered by a newspaper, while the computer on the desk deletes all files. The newspaper lets us know that a company named Tricell has bought out Will Farmer, and then we cut to the Will Farmer ruins, where Tricell personnel are digging through things, and someone finds part of the Tyrant. So, was this a good adaptation?
Yes. I think so. It had zombies, it had shooting them in the head, it had some schlock.
It had them appearing out of nowhere. But it didn't have a rocket launcher showdown with the boss, so...
He shot grenades with his rifle.
That's not a rocket launcher.
It explodes.
I feel like we're missing too many herbs to say this was a good adaptation.
So is it a spooks up, scares down, or a boo?
I think for me it's a spooks down, maybe verging a boo. Because, like, I'm sorry, but you're Resident Evil. I'll give you, like, 5 cliches for the movie. But it was just thing after thing. I think this is the most I've rolled my eyes at things happening and being like, well, I should have known that was going to happen because of course it was going to happen. I think personally, if your plot cannot be completed by anyone else except for this exact same cast of characters, you're doing something wrong. And the only reason anyone survives is because she was somehow related to the villain. Angela, I mean, sorry.
For me, it's a spooks up. I actually saw this movie before years and years ago, and I think it's the best one, the best Resident Evil movie I saw so far. It's like the pacing is good, and it's easy to follow. It's not, it doesn't have too many characters or isn't too convoluted. It's, and like, it's easy to pick up even if you didn't play Resident Evil or don't remember it very well, like I do.
Doesn't have too many characters. It has like 6 recurring characters.
I mean, main characters. Like, the last one we watched had like 7 main characters or something.
70 characters. Yeah, some of the things we watched do have too many characters. For me, it was a spook sup. I enjoyed it. The animation was pretty good. There wasn't one of these Resident Evil movies that we've watched. The CGI got a bit spotty in places, but this was fairly good all the way through. They managed to merge some real life images with CGI pretty seamlessly, and the plot wasn't hard to follow or complicated. It's a good popcorn movie.
Yeah.
So does it deserve its My Animalist score of 6.93?
No. No, I can't see it. I think it's lower.
I was surprised that it wasn't higher, because again, this is the one that I enjoyed the most so far, but like hearing Arturo's complaints about it, like, I think it's a fair score.
Yeah, I agree. Might go a little higher, but no, it's a fair score, I suppose. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Gus.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Spooky Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, find us on social media, or listen to the Grincast podcast. Until next time, scream on!
Ooh, spooky, scary!